Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man. All right, Gustavo, welcome to the call. Great to have you finally on the podcast, man. It's been a long time. Just to give people a background of who you are and why you're the man, the myth, the legend, the guapo. I met you, was it probably 2 years ago through another Facebook group, and that group was centered around travel and cool places to go. A bunch of guys who are living like the nomad life, sharing travel stories and travel tips. And of all the guys on there, I kind of thought that you were the most legit. I always read your stories and all your interesting tips and tricks of the trade. I was also kind of living the nomad lifestyle back then as well. And we got to talking more, and I found out you have a really interesting background, really just awesome all-around dude, in good shape, great with girls, smart business guy. Fast forward to about a month ago, and I had you come out and help out with the Kiev Immersion Workshop and share your knowledge, and that was fucking awesome. So it's good to have you on the podcast finally, so you can tell your story. So welcome.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
Yeah. So tell us, how'd you kind of get into this whole nomadic traveling around the world lifestyle? And I know you also have some beginnings, kind of like me, as like a dorky fat kid. So maybe start there, or wherever you want to, wherever you want to start.
Yeah, definitely. So I want to start from my childhood. My father was an entrepreneur, and I knew all my life that I wanted to be an entrepreneur, with all, the good and bad things that had. So even though I started off as an employee, at some point in my life, I decided to start my own business. And my very first business, by the way, my dad was broke by the time I was an adult. So I never had, financial support from my family. So I raised investment from people that I knew for my first business, which was a motorcycle dealership. And the reason I'm telling you this is why I became like so fat and dorky at this point in my life. But I started this business, which was a motorcycle dealership back in Argentina. And this was late 2007. And the reason this was such a good business is because people would show up with very basically no income whatsoever, and they would buy a motorcycle in installments. And the installments were so cheap that it was cheaper to pay for the motorcycle installments than to pay for the bus to commute, to work. Wow. So in Argentina, this became like super popular. And we were basically, selling motorcycles like nothing, hotcakes. That's how you say in English, right? Hotcakes.
Yeah. Flying off the shelves, so we like hotcakes or whatever they say.
So the whole thing is that it was completely subprime loan.
Yeah.
So these people who were buying motorcycles, they were like, these were the cheapest motorcycles you could get, like Chinese, style motorcycles that are like super cheap to maintain. And these
Gustavo,
people would show up with
Do me a favor, try your other headphones, because these sound kind of shitty. There's like some crackling.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, so much better.
So as I was saying, back in 2007, this was my very first business. I raised back in the day, it was $200,000 to open the motorcycle dealership and buy the first batch of motorcycles. And we started selling really well beginning of 2008. And then what happened by mid-2008, a lot of people already know this, but this big crisis started in the US and spread all over the world. And suddenly there was basically no more credit. And we were selling 90% of our motorcycles with credit. So my whole business that took me so hard work to build was gone in basically 6 months. It was like terrible timing.
Wow.
So
let me ask real quick. How'd you get into the motorcycle business in the first place?
I had a friend from childhood, and his family were the owners of a motorcycle factory called Gilera. It's a Italian brand. Maybe you heard about it. Gilera, it's like Italian scooters.
Uh-huh.
But in Argentina, they own the brand, but in reality, the scooters are not Italian. They're just the Chinese super cheap ones, because those are the ones that sell the best in Argentina,
Okay.
So basically, I knew this guy from high school, and one day we were talking, and he showed me the numbers, and he said, "Wow, every month we're selling more and more and more motorcycles, simply because of this, you know, credit boom. Everybody can take a motorcycle, just showing up and signing a paper, and they will just pay for it later." So basically, when I saw the first, I thought this is an amazing business opportunity. So I just started calling every single person in the world that I knew to, you know, put a little bit of money. And I was an employee at the time, so I was working in a human resources company, which has nothing to do with motorcycles. And at the time, I thought that they would never raise $100,000 because I'm just a kid who is trying to raise money and nobody knows me, you know? But eventually, I just convinced enough people that I raised enough amount of money, and I just went to my boss and I said, "I'm sorry, I need to quit. You know, I just raised money to start my own business." So that's how I started. And it lasted for about 6 months. And as I said, for like terrible timing, you know, sometimes luck plays a big role in this. And at this point, you know, I just didn't want to lose my investors' money. So I was basically just cutting as many costs as I could. I fired basically the few employees that I had. And I was working almost by myself. So I was working like 14 hours per day. And, you know, at that point in my life, my last priority was my own health. I was just sitting in the motorcycle dealership 14 hours per day. I was super stressed. I was going back home and I was sitting in McDonald's every single day. Well, you know, every other day in McDonald's and every other day in Burger King. Like the worst possible health you can have, you know, horrible lifestyle. Just sitting on a desk 14 hours, eating shit food, doing no exercise whatsoever. And I got to a point, and actually I did show you my picture when I was fat. Unfortunately, I cannot share it through a call, but I think you've seen it, right?
Yeah.
Completely chubby. Yeah, I was completely chubby. I had like a double chin. My face looked different. And the picture that you looked was exactly from this stage of my life. When I was working, I was overworked. I was eating fast food every day. I was super stressed. I had no idea how to get out of this. And at some point, I talked to my investors and I said, "Listen, this is the reality. No matter how many hours I work per day, there's a situation in the country. There's no credit. We can either wait until the whole situation changes, or we can close the motorcycle dealership now and you will at least recover your investment." Because at this point, we still had enough money that I could pay back my investors. So we all decided to finally close down the motorcycle dealership. I managed to pay everybody back, which is a really good thing. And at that point, I said, "I need a break. I need to change my lifestyle." And what I did is, this is when I started to change first my health, you know. I bought a ticket to the Amazon jungle. I was like, I want to get out of the city. I want to get out of the stress. I just want to go to the most remote place possible. So I just went to the Amazon jungle. And I was there for 20 days. And that's a long story about the Amazon jungle. I could make a whole call just about that. But basically, I lost a lot of weight just by being in nature. By being in nature and being, you know, healthy and just being completely relieved from stress. And in 20 days, I lost about 4 kilograms, which is about 10 pounds. Yeah. And when I came back to the city in Buenos Aires, I said, okay, I will just use this as a chance to start improving my health. And first of all, I started with a personal trainer. I went to the gym for 3 months with a personal trainer. And at this point, I was getting a new job. But this personal trainer, actually, I definitely recommend doing that for people who want to get in shape, because the hardest part is getting started with getting in shape. You know, once you already build momentum and you're going to the gym every day, it's easy to keep doing that. But in the beginning, it's so hard, you know, because you have to change your habits.
Yeah.
So this personal trainer, he was coming to the office every single day and he was picking me up, me and my business partner. He was picking us up. And even if we didn't want to go to the gym, he would just like grab us and say, like, "You're coming to the gym." You know, like, there's no way you're not going. So that was really, really good. And he was really tough. Like the first day I worked out with him, I threw up. So, but when I look back, you know, in those 3 months, he basically changed completely my life and my habits and my mind. So in those 3 months, I just got a new habit of working out and I started just eating healthy. And you know what? It's not such a big science, you know, just quit McDonald's, like just be reasonable and eat healthy stuff. Some people are very, you know, very picky about what they eat. I actually like everything. And that's my problem. If you put a hamburger in front of me, I will eat it. If you put, you know, tuna with salad in front of me, I will eat it anyway. So yeah. I like everything. So if I like everything, I might as well make a conscious choice to eat the healthy stuff. So once I just learned how to choose the healthy stuff, it was just really easy for me to get in shape. And literally, I changed my body in 6 months completely. And I kept it. And this was 10 years ago, you know?
So yeah, and before and after pictures, because now you look like a Greek god, you know? and before, maybe I can post a photo, possibly, with your permission, of course, below the podcast, if you want. But
So the picture that you saw, you know what? I have never posted it anywhere, but I'm actually thinking about doing that. It's not in social media because it's a very embarrassing picture. But I will definitely, I think I will post it at some point.
Yeah.
And you will be the first to have the right to distribute it.
The transformation is so crazy. It's great.
But it's surprising because when you build a new habit, you know, like before it was hard for me to go to the gym, but now if I don't go to the gym for 2 or 3 days, I feel bad. I feel like I need to do something. I feel that, you know, I just crave going to the gym. And literally, I just came from the gym right now, you know, and I feel much better after that.
Yep.
So it's crazy how, you know, habits can change completely the way you feel.
Totally. In the beginning, like you said, building a habit can be that's the most difficult part. But then once you've once you've done it for about 30 days and then you don't do it, you feel shitty, not doing it. So it's it's interesting how the brain works as far as habit developments.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's crazy. Like I haven't been to the gym for 3 days because I was traveling for the last few days and I had paperwork problems in Kazakhstan, so I couldn't leave the country. And I didn't go for 3 days, which is really a long time for me. And I was feeling like shit this morning. So I went to the gym now, I had a really good workout, and I'm feeling like completely fresh now. So yeah, I'm a completely different person than I was before.
Ask you, how did that impact your dating life? Or, you know, you don't have to go into like crazy detail, but were you dating prior to that? Like, were you always kind of chubby, or were you in good shape before? And then you just got fat working in the office. And what was the impact on your love life?
So growing up, I was like skinny, normal, you know, from my family, from my father's side, like every single person is skinny. And from my mother's side, every single person is chubby. So like, I think I have both genes inside of me and they're fighting with each other. So I'm trying to like just keep the best genes out. But in terms of dating life, to be honest, when I was really chubby, I had a girlfriend for 4 years. So I was like, I had a really good girlfriend, but I was living a lifestyle that I didn't want to live. And I was just craving, you know, changing my life and living abroad. And at some point, and this is later, a little bit later in my life, but I started a new business and I broke up with her and I told her, listen, my dream is to travel around the world. You're an excellent person. And I still say this because I really respect her. She's an amazing human being, but she wanted to get settled and she wanted to have family and children and she wanted to stay in Argentina and she's a doctor. So she had no plans of traveling. And so I basically broke her heart and I told her I'm going to travel around the world and I'm going to live abroad. And that's what I did. And since then I don't live in Argentina, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So, when I started dating, I was a little bit rusty, you know, like not only physically, but also emotionally, because after you've been in a relationship for 4 years, you don't date.
Right.
That being said, you know, like when I first got into shape, my priority was not dating women, was, you know, just getting my financial life in order, because remember, I just closed the business, and my health life in order. And at that point, my least priority was dating. That being said, when I first started dating, honestly, I didn't feel that, you know, when I got into shape, first I thought, okay, now I'm going to, you know, every girl will like me. And people think that being good looking is a huge determining factor in your dating life. And I would like to argue that definitely it helps, but women are much less attracted to looks than men are. So, you know, if you can be the most physically attractive guy in the world, but if you approach a girl and you have no social skills and you're like a social retard, it will definitely never work. That's my point of view on it. And when I started, you know, approaching women in the beginning, it was really not what I thought it would be. Or at least I was getting attention when I got, you know, into shape, but I was not getting attention from the girls that I really liked. And that's another problem. You know, a lot of guys who are really in good shape and they're really good looking, they only will date the girls that give them attention, but not the girls that they really like. Yeah. And I must say, for a long time, that was my situation. And you know, I want to put this into context. After this one business, I started a new business, and then I moved to New York. And in New York, there's a lot of dating going on. There's a lot of foreigners. There's a lot of people from all around the world that come by themselves to New York, and they're very open to meet new people. And I had a friend in New York that we were going out. We were both single. We were going out very often because New York, you know, really never sleeps. And one time he told me, Gustavo, you're the most successful guy that I know. And I said, why do you say that? He said, well, I've never seen anybody reject you ever. And instead of taking that as a compliment, I actually thought, you know what? The reason that I've never been rejected is because I'm only approaching the girls that I know will like me, but not the girls that actually I like. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Then, you know, I didn't really say that to him, but it actually got me thinking, you know, back in the day, when I would see a girl that I really, really like, I wouldn't approach her if she doesn't give me, you know, the signals that I need. And, you know, I am really good at reading body language. And sometimes that's a problem because I would only go and approach the girl that is flirting with me, that is giving me eye contact, that is smiling at me, that is touching her hair, that is like, you know, initiating some kind of, you know, conversation with me or some kind of, you know, invitation for me to talk to her. But at some point in my life, I realized that, you know, you should go for what you want in life. You should not stay with, you know, with just whatever comes to you. And that was a huge change in my dating life, definitely. And of course, after that, I got rejected a million times, but at least, you know, I got rejected by people that I wanted to date instead of just playing safe always.
Well, it's very rare to hear that, because most guys, especially guys who are good looking, mm-hmm. and get a lot of attention, almost every single one of those guys ends up with, you know, a girl who's cute, but, you know, nothing. You're always like, wow, that guy's so amazingly good looking. Why isn't he with a girl who's equally as good looking? And the reason is why you just described, is because they're, you know, they're scared to approach the ones that they're really attracted to. So they end up just kind of like picking the ones that pick them. And then those girls felt like they won the lottery. And I see it, you know, and then you see the smoking hot, you know, dime with the, like, you know, dorky tech guy, but he has game, and he, maybe he's not dorky, but he's very successful. Or you know, it's as you said, you know, I'm kind of just, the looks don't matter nearly as much as people think. They'll get you in the door, but that's about Absolutely. It. Yeah. And most good looking guys, Absolutely. They never make the transition. So I think maybe it is because you had, I don't know. My theory would be, if you were never fat, maybe you wouldn't have done it. Because almost every guy I know who's like good looking, they've always been good looking. You know, they never really needed to develop these other sort of skills. You know, unless they got rejected at an early age or something like that. So, anyways, I'm basically just saying, good job for not being one of those guys.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you. And yeah, I see this happen all the time. You know, I have friends from all around the world simply because I've been traveling a lot for the last few years. And I can tell you for sure, I have a couple friends of mine that are guys, and they're the best looking guys I've seen in my whole life. I have a friend of mine. He's been in the cover of Men's Health magazine like 5 times. When we go out together in New York, I feel like I'm ugly compared to him. I literally, like, this guy is like, he's better looking even in person than in the pictures. And he's taller than me, and he's like, he has like this ridiculous six pack. It's just, he's in ridiculous shape and ridiculously good looking. Even the last hair of his head is like on the perfect angle. He's like a walking Photoshop, basically. But this, you know, when I think of him, we go out and he does get a lot of attention from girls, but I have never seen him approach a girl. And I can tell you, the super good looking girls, the most attractive girls that you will see in a bar or in the street, these girls will never approach him. And that's the thing. I think he's actually missing out because he never developed this habit of going for what he wants. He just gets the girl that comes to him, not the one that he wants. And in a way, that kind of you know, it's counterintuitive, but that can play against him in a way. And I have two friends that are exactly the same. They're from different countries, but they're both extremely good looking. And I have never seen either of them approach a girl. Both of them wait for girls to come to them, but these are never like the girls that they really want.
Yeah. It just goes to show you have to develop that approach muscle. Cause I've coached a pretty famous celebrity, and I was like, dude, why? You don't need coaching. You're getting laid left, right, and center. He's like, I know, but these girls constantly throw themselves at me because I'm famous, but I want to be able to approach girls that, you know, that I like. And I want to be able to pick up a girl who doesn't know who mm-hmm. I am. I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, it was cool to hear that because I've done the work learning to approach. You've done the work. You're a crazy approach beast. Mm-hmm. You'll approach every girl you see. So, you know,
every girl that I see, every girl that I like.
That you like, you know? Yeah, obviously. Yeah. You know, you have zero approach anxiety. Let's put it that way. Yeah, so it's such an important skill.
Yeah, but definitely, you know, actually, you know, if I think about it, I am personally extremely picky. There's like very few girls that I personally like, you know. If I would walk into, let's say, a bar, or I would go for a walk in the street, I feel attracted to 1% of girls. You know how picky I am, because, yeah, you know, I don't want to say it in public, but you know exactly what kind of girl I like, and not every girl is like this, right?
Right.
So I'm very picky. So when I see, if I am lucky enough that I'm in a bar and there happens to be a girl that is like the type of girl that I find attractive, I don't want to miss my chance, you know? And back in the day, I would, because I had no idea how to approach someone. And I remember the first time that I changed my mind about this, and I will just make a short, you know, stop here to explain what happened after I came back from the Amazon jungle. Then I started a new business. And then I was working on this business for about 6 years. At this time, I was focusing on my health. I was definitely going to the gym, but I was still having my top priority being work. And work is not necessarily personal development. It's just like my company was everything. You know, when you have a company, it's like having a baby. All you care about is that the company, you know, even if your baby's crying at 3 a.m., you have to be there, you know, for the baby and just, you know, feed the baby. So that was my main priority. It was just working and going to the gym, and I really didn't have that much of a social life. But after almost 6 years of working 24/7 and being like super stressed again, I finally ended up selling my business, and I went to travel around the world. And this is like 2016, so it's not that long ago. And in 2016, I finally decided to go travel around the world, and for the first time in my life, basically, I could be sitting having a conversation with someone and not being worrying about, you know, getting a call or having, you know, this urgent message or email that I had to answer. So I was, to be honest, from 2016 until now, it has been the happiest years of my whole life. So I am incredibly grateful for this life that I have right now. And at the same time, when I started traveling around the world, I started seeing different cultures, and it's not just about women, but I got very, very interested in learning different mindsets and different cultures, the way people think about life in general. And whenever I have the chance, I like being very sociable. Like, I've always been very sociable in my life, but I never had the time to do so like I do now. And I started focusing a lot in personal development since 2016. And going back to this whole approach thing, that's when I finally decided to, like, you know, become the best version of myself. And I remember this one time I was in Belgium with a good friend of mine, who is at the time, and even today, is still probably the most confident guy I met in my life. And he's not very good looking. I hope he doesn't hear this podcast and he doesn't feel insulted. He's like an average guy. Okay. I don't believe he's very good looking. He's actually kind of short. He's on the short side. I think he's quite average looking, but if you talk to him, you immediately feel his confidence. It's like there's something about the way he behaves, the way he speaks, that he transmits confidence like in the first 5 seconds that you meet him. It doesn't matter if he's talking to a guy or to a girl. It doesn't matter if he's flirting with a person. He's always, he has this confident energy that comes from his blood. I have no idea where it comes from. And he's one of the most successful men I've seen in my whole life with women. And I was so impressed by this guy that I finally decided to, you know, improve myself. And I remember this time that we were walking down the street in the street in Belgium during the day in Antwerp. It's a beautiful city in Belgium. And especially in this country, like a northern European country, people are quite cold and quite reserved. It's not appropriate to talk to a girl in the street. And that's why I was even more impressed by his style there. So I remember like there's a girl walking, you know, opposite to us. And he basically made a comment about the girl being beautiful. And I said, okay, say something to her. But I was saying like a joke. I thought he wouldn't do it. And he basically turned around. He ran after the girl. And I couldn't hear what he said to her. But I remember like I watched both of them speaking. They shake hands. And I could see her face from far away. I saw her face like light up. And she seemed so happy that he approached her. And they exchanged numbers. And he came back to me. And I was like, wow, how did you do that? I couldn't even imagine that a guy could approach a girl in the middle of the street out of nowhere without any eye contact or prior interaction and just ask for her number. And she would say yes. And that just blew my mind. You know, now it sounds like a normal thing. To you probably sounds normal. But for me at the time, that blew my mind completely.
Sure.
And that was a few years ago. And then, you know, I told him, like, how do you deal with the fear of rejection? Because I think we all have some kind of fear of rejection, even if we don't talk about it. And but at the time, I was really, really scared of rejection. And remember, this is the time where my friends were thinking that I'm the most successful guy ever because girls were approaching me. But I was still terrified of being rejected. That's why I never approached the girls that I really liked. So when I saw this guy and my mind was blown, I asked him, how do you get over the fear of rejection? And he actually told me like really, you know, in a very relaxed way, he said, well, when I talk to a girl, I feel like I'm giving her a gift. If I go to you and I give you $100 bill and I put it on your hand and you don't want it, should I feel bad about it? Or should I be okay with it? And I said, no, if I don't want your $100, you know, it's my problem. It's not yours.
Yeah.
And he said, well, that's the way I feel about it, you know? So I don't know. That just completely blew my mind. I still remember that first time that happened. And it took me a while to change my mindset, but that's the way I feel right now. Like if I talk to a girl and she doesn't want to talk to me, I mean, it's absolutely not a problem at all. And most times, if you're being really a nice person and you're just approaching somebody in a very nice way and they're not nice to you, usually it says a lot about them. It doesn't say much about you.
Right.
You know, especially somebody that you don't know. You don't know where this girl is coming from.
There's so many reasons why they... Oh, sorry, I cut you off there.
I was saying that, if you talk to a girl and she rejects you, you have no idea what happened with her life. Maybe she just broke up with her boyfriend. Maybe she doesn't like, you know, maybe you are white and she likes black guys. Maybe she's a lesbian. You really have no idea. So there's absolutely no reason to feel bad about it.
Agreed. 100%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, the few times that I felt really bad in my life, well, not few times, actually a lot of times, when I saw a girl that I really liked and I didn't say anything or I doubted too much, and I missed my opportunity, then I kicked myself for the whole day and sometimes for many days after that. But if I see a girl that I really like and I talk to her and I am being nice to her and she rejects me, I forget about it usually in 30 seconds because, you know, it's not my problem. I did my part, you know, what can I do?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's always the shots that it's not the shots that we miss. It's the shots that we don't take that causes that pain of regret.
100%. And I learned, you know, the hard way that rejection is much better than regret, for sure.
Totally. For sure.
Yeah.
So tell us a bit how you managed to, you know, start the new business and then, you know, exit that business to the point where you can travel the world. Because a lot of guys would love that. And I think they'd be interested in hearing that part of the story too.
Sure. Absolutely. Back in the day, actually this still exists. There's a program from Chile, the country Chile. It's called Startup Chile. And they have a grant, which is $40,000 for entrepreneurs from all around the world. Basically, Chile is a very small country. They don't have a lot of resources. And the government is making this strategic bet to transform the country kind of like in the Silicon Valley of Latin America. That's at least the initial plan. So they said this, listen, we don't have a lot of resources, so let's just try to make this the technology hub of Latin America. So we will be giving you $40,000. The only thing they ask you is that you move to Chile for at least 6 months, which is the duration of the program. And after that, if you know if things work out, then you will stay there and you will build a company and you will create employment. And if it doesn't work out, you can leave. So basically, back in the day, we had this digital advertising startup and we were running out of money and we were desperate. It was not working. I remember I had this conversation with my business partners, and this is after the motorcycle dealership. We tried everything. I didn't even have money to pay my own salary or just to pay rent or anything. So at some point, I went to this tech conference, and there was this guy from Startup Chile giving he was a speaker in the conference, and he said, well, I'm from Startup Chile and this is the program. And by the way, tonight is the last night to apply for this year. So if you want to apply, you can do it tonight. And I remember I went home and I just filled in the form online, which took me like an hour or something. And then the next day I went to speak with my business partners and I said, guys, listen, we have no more money. And this is my last attempt. And if it doesn't work out, well, then I will just go, you know, I still want to travel, so maybe I will just go to Europe and get a job as a waiter or something in a restaurant. You know, I was whatever. I was just like, it was literally my last resort. And it's almost a miracle when I think about it, but we got chosen. So we were like the first generation, by the way. Now they're on generation like 20 or something. So yeah, we got the $40,000. I moved to Chile like 3 months after that. And like 6 months after I moved, we got $1 million in investment from a Chilean VC, venture capital fund.
Wow.
So after we got the...
So you got the $40,000, so then $1 million 6 months later?
Exactly.
And yeah. You were living in Argentina at the time, or were you in New York?
I was in Argentina. I had absolutely no gotcha. Money to go to New York.
Okay,
no.
That's it.
Absolutely. I couldn't even pay rent in Argentina, man. I moved to Chile because it's a requirement from the program to move to Chile. And I definitely recommend this program because it's not just, to be honest, like $40,000 is not a lot of money, but the networking that you build there, they bring like hundreds of entrepreneurs from all around the world. There's other people from Harvard, from Yale, from all these like Ivy League, universities. And I was actually honored to be chosen by them. I am so happy they chose me.
It's, you know, basically it sounds like they've created I'm blanking on the name, but an incubator.
It's definitely an incubator.
Whenever you have an incubator situation, it's very similar to mm-hmm. like the Leverage Group, for example. You got a bunch of people, it's a mastermind. You got a bunch of people working on the same sort of thing, slightly different variations, working together, sharing mm-hmm. their ideas, all that motivation, all that teamwork. And, you know, it really produces crazy results. Like incubators are so powerful, like Y Combinator, for example, in Silicon Valley. So it just goes to show you like basically what happened when, you know, your company was going dusto and then all of a sudden you got $1 million in the bank, you know, 6 months later.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say, that, you know, Startup Chile was my experience, but, you know, any incubator in the world, like at the end of the day, it's the same model. So the one thing that I did like about Startup Chile is that it's a government program. So they don't really ask for equity in your company. They just ask for nothing. They literally give you $40,000 for free. They just ask you to move there for 6 months.
Wow.
So yeah. So it's equity free. There are really not many equity free programs around the world. So it's a grant. But anyway, it doesn't matter if it's equity free or not. If you have a startup idea and you have no idea where to go, I would definitely recommend reaching out to different accelerators or incubators.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. So what happened next?
So we got $1 million. Then we got an office in Argentina. We got a beautiful office on the top floor of a building. We got like 20 employees. We got like, you know, like typical tech startup life. You know, we had a barbecue every Friday, but I was working a lot. And usually with startups is that when you first receive the money, you're burning money because you still haven't got like a really proven business model, or it's still not proven that it's scalable, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's why venture capital is risky, by the way. But we got to a point that we burned most of the money and we only had, you know, like about 1 month or 2 months left of salaries to pay. And then I was like, okay, we have to, I mean, this time I will not let the company die. So we have to be profitable one way or another. So finally, we did make the company profitable. And about 4 or 5 years later, we were finally, actually 2015 was the year that I retired as a CEO of the company, but that was our best year. We closed 2015 profitable. We had more money in the bank in 2015 in cash than when we got the $1 million in the first place. We got about, you know, 25 employees. Everything was running smoothly. And at that point, we were having different visions of the future with some of my business partners, because I was the CEO, but I was not the only co-founder. So we had actually in total 4 co-founders. And at some point I was so overworked, and particularly one of my business partners had a different vision for the company. And I said, listen, let's do this. If you want to be CEO, I'll just hand you the keys of the company. You can be CEO. And I will take a sabbatical for 6 months with no salary. I will just keep my equity. And that's when I first went traveling for 6 months. And it's weird because it was such a relieving, you know, after being used to having your phone ringing all the time, it was such a relieving thing to, you know, be 6 months not caring about what's going on. I was just caring about like the board meetings, which is once a month, and that's all, you know. So that, my lifestyle changed completely at that point.
And how'd you afford to travel? Yeah. Had you had just made money, saved up money from the prior year or two?
I saved a lot of money, that's for sure. I saved a lot of money. And at that point, I was burning my personal money, but I didn't care because I was so happy that I felt like I was spending my money in a good way, you know? So yeah, I was burning my savings, but I still had the equity in my company at that point. And also, this is really funny, actually. But I had some investment in Bitcoin at the time. Long story short, I ended up traveling for a whole year. And at the end of the year, when I was supposed to stop traveling, I realized that because of my Bitcoin investment, I had more money at the end of the year than at the beginning when I started traveling. And I have done nothing for the whole year, you know? That's the whole thing with cryptocurrencies, you know?
I was lucky enough to have the same situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like I just spent all this money. Yeah, thank God for Bitcoin at the time.
Exactly. But you know, yeah, well, that's just timing, you know. If you do this in the wrong timing, you know, yeah, right. it's you're fucked basically. But yeah, so at some point, you know, long story short, at some point I had a chance to either go back to my company and be an executive again, or we could have a chance to sell the company. Long story short, we sold the company. And to be honest, if I had come back to the company, I would have made way more money. But at that point, my lifestyle was more important than making more money for me. So yeah, I sold the company and I've been traveling for over 3 years now, and I'm very, very happy about that.
Yeah, I love that story because, you know, I talk to so many guys who work really hard and they're making a lot of money and they're complaining about their social life and their dating life. And I'm like, bro, you know, you're not investing in your social life or dating life. Like, all you do is make money, and you wonder why you're unhappy. You were in a situation where you had some value decisions to make, and you decided to invest in your social life and traveling and your dating life. So, can you tell us a little bit more about why you were able to make that decision and kind of walk away from the money? Because a lot of people just get those golden handcuffs on them, and then that's it. They marry the wrong girl, they get in a relationship, they settle, they're making tons of money, but then they end up getting divorced, losing half of it, or God knows what else. They get fat, and you know, a lot of bad things can happen.
Absolutely. Well, the thing for me in that case, it was kind of like, you know, instead of making a big decision and saying, hey, I'm leaving the company, it was like a temporary decision. I said, hey, I will take a sabbatical for 6 months. So I will just try this out. Mm-hmm. At the end of the 6 months, I realized, you know, how much I value, you know, my lifestyle, and how much I value like having, you know, not so much stress as I had before. So Also, I realized one more thing. You know, people dream all the time about being millionaires or being billionaires. But, you know, I realized personally for the lifestyle that I want and having all the luxuries that I want, I need way less money than I thought I needed.
Especially when you travel to places like we do, where, you know, the dollar goes a really long way and the lifestyle is
exactly
10x better.
Absolutely. And, you know, like if you look at my Instagram, you will see, you know, pictures of me like driving supercars. And, I'm a very simple guy. The only thing that I like is supercars, which unfortunately is very expensive. The only expensive thing that I like is supercars. But then when it comes to, you know, hotels and stuff, I don't really care about going to a very expensive place. But I realized that in this time and age, we're in the sharing economy. So you rarely need to own anything. You know, back in the day, I was thinking, oh, you know, I need $500,000 to buy a Lamborghini or whatever. Man, I've driven Lamborghinis in so many different countries, and I never owned one. I want to tell you one thing. Never in my whole life I owned a car, ever, in my whole life. I'm a member of a club in New York. It's called the Classic Car Club. And basically you pay a yearly membership. And they own like 30 different supercars. So once you're a member, you can just take any car you want. They have anything from, you know, a Porsche from the 1950s until a Ferrari from 2019. Wow. So, and this is really funny because when I moved to the US, I first wanted to buy a car, but I didn't have a legal residence. I was just a tourist in the beginning. So I didn't have a local driver license. So if you don't have a driver license, you cannot insure the car, so you cannot own it. So this was kind of my plan B, to be a member of the club. But when I became a member, I liked it so much. And I realized, you know, I rarely need to drive. And when I drive, it's more like for pleasure than for transport. If I really need transport, usually just taking an Uber is cheaper and simpler because you don't need to park or et cetera, et cetera. And when I need a car, it's usually because I want to get out of the city. And when I want to get out of the city, I want to get a really nice car. So for me, that the Classic Car Club was perfect. I love supercars. So I just did, you know, one time I did a road trip from Belgium to Germany, and I was driving in, I don't know if people in the call are familiar with the car racing, but I was driving in Spa, which is one of the most famous Formula One racetracks. And then I was driving in the Nürburgring, which is probably the most famous racetrack in the world. And then last year I drove from London to Ibiza in Lamborghini. So I was so happy. And then when I think about the numbers, it's way, way less expensive than most people think it is. The same with flights. I fly very often business class. I flew many times first class. And if you're smart enough with the way you spend your money and the way you get your points with credit cards, and if you know how the system works when it comes to airlines, it's way cheaper than people think it is.
Yeah, there's so many ways you can travel hack. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you too, because you have an amazing ability to get into nightclubs for free and, you know, save money and that. And those are some really awesome tips. Share some of those with us too.
Definitely. Well, and that's part also of it. That's connected with money as well. You know, like when I tell you, like before, I just wanted to be a millionaire to get all these dreams in my life, which is like supercars and flying first class. And, you know, the same with nightclubs. You can either know how the system works and you can just keep the line and get in for free, or you can just go to the door and pay, you know, $1,000 for a table or sometimes $2,000 for a bottle service in New York. I've seen a lot of people pay that to get into a club in New York, and it just blows my mind because I never in my life ever paid to get into a club in New York. That being said, actually, New York was like a great school for me because you lived in New York before, right?
Yep, for 4 years.
And exactly. So you know how tough it is to get into clubs in New York. Most of the time, the face control is really hard. You know, there's a line. If you don't know anybody, you cannot get in. When I first moved to New York, my social skills were very poor, especially when it comes to nightlife. So I have done the walk of shame so many times. And for me, the walk of shame is, and it's really funny because people explain to me what the walk of shame means in English. Remember, I'm not a native English speaker. But I thought that the walk of shame was like, you do the line to the club, you wait 20 minutes in the line. When you finally get to the door, they say, no, you cannot come in. And then you have to walk in front of the other people, go away. So for me, that's the walk of shame. And I have done that so many times, man, in New York. So I really hit, I did that walk of shame at least 20 times until I realized how things work. Mm-hmm. And now I literally never make a line in New York. I just know people. And if I don't know people, I know how to get to know people before I go to the club. Even if I, like literally last week I was in Kazakhstan, like this country I have never been before. And just trying to, visit new countries. And I'm trying to get to eventually 100 countries. I'm right now at 89 countries. So I arrived in Kazakhstan without knowing anyone. And within a week, I was just going to the most popular nightclub. They have a line that goes around the corner. It's probably a 100 meters line. I was just keeping the line, knowing everybody at the door, walking in, getting free drinks from the bar. And all of these things, actually, when I look back, I learned in New York.
And so tell us more of the nitty gritty. What do we do to skip these lines?
I will tell you the most basic stuff that people don't do. And it's so obvious that it blows my mind that people don't do it. Number one, first thing you should do when you walk into a bar, always, always, always ask the name of the person at the door and greet them and introduce yourself. Make sure they remember your face. And if you're bad with names, write down that name in your phone. Even if you think you will never come back to this bar, just write it down. Just get it into, it's like a habit. You will be surprised how many times I thought I will never come back to a bar and or to a city. I just leave the city, I come back to the same city 1 year later and greet the person at the door of the bar with by their name. And they're so blown away that I still remember them after 1 year and just remember their name. Sometimes they just make me skip the line just for that sole reason.
Yeah.
The same thing goes with bartenders. Most of the time when people go to a club, they just want to meet girls and they just don't care at all about the employees. I care more about the people that work there than about, meeting girls. And it's, you will be surprised how much of a difference that makes, another thing, I usually like to go early, especially the first times. I can give you an example. Like in New York, one of my favorite places is called the Jane Hotel. It's a very popular place in New York and it's always full. And back in the day, the bouncer at the door, he didn't like me. So if I would go at 10 p.m., the bouncer would be there and he would say, no, you cannot come in. And once they say no, it's really hard to change that decision, like because they remember your face. If they said no once, most likely they will always say no. And the more you try, it's too late, actually. It's hard. You don't have a second chance to make a first impression. So I always try to make my very first impression as good as I can. That being said, for about 2 years, I couldn't get into the Jane Hotel. So this is what I did. The shift of the bouncer starts at 9 p.m. So I would just go before 9 p.m. because once I'm inside, they cannot kick me out, right? So I got used to going early. But you know what? This is the beauty of going early. When you go at 9 p.m. to the Jane Hotel, and this goes for most nightclubs around the world, when you go early, there's not many people. So when you go to the bar, you have the chance to actually order a cocktail. The bartenders, they will take their time to make the cocktail. They will do it exactly the way you like it. You can have a conversation with them. They will remember your face. They will remember your name. You can tell them your problems. It's almost like free therapy. And right. I ended up becoming friends with all of the bartenders in the Jane Hotel. I added all of them in my Facebook. And that's only because I go early. If I go too late, the place is super crowded. They barely have time. They have 50 different people at the bar trying to yell at them to order for drinks. Everybody's frustrated. So it's a completely different dynamic when you go late. So especially in the first time that you go to a club, I will always suggest to go early, get acquainted with everybody who works there. And I know it sounds like a lot of work, but I personally enjoy it. I actually enjoy going to a bar and getting to know the people who work there because the next time I go, no matter how late I go, they will remember me because I am the guy that they had this personal conversation with. And if I go to the Jane Hotel today, I mean, this is one place that I've been going for 5 years, so I can definitely skip the line. They have even two lines of bouncers. First, there's a bouncer outside of the building because the line is too long. And then once you go inside, there's a bouncer in the bar at the door of the actual bar inside the hotel. So there's two lines. And I am friends with the bouncers on the two different walls, basically. And then I'm friends with the bartender. So I can skip both of the lines. I will walk inside. And, the last time I remember I was there, I arrived. I hadn't been like in 6 months to the Jane Hotel because I was out of New York. And I saw at the bar, it was a lot of people were there trying to get their drinks. And as soon as I managed to see one of the bartenders that I knew, there was vodka orange put on the bar. Like, and that's my favorite drink, vodka with orange. And I arrived and I said, "Hey, how are you, Clary? Such a long time. I want a vodka orange just like the one that you just made." And she said, "No, this one is for you because I saw you walking from the street to here through the window." And she was like, "I prepared specially for you." So I basically skipped both lines. And by the time I got inside, there was already a drink prepared for me exactly the way I liked it. And I didn't even pay for it. So that's what the big difference. No. No.
Yeah. You know, it's great because you can't even, if someone's listening and they're like, "Oh, that's cool, whatever, but I don't really go to nightclubs." This works just as well at restaurants. And if you're taking a girl on a first date or just more, you know, cocktail bars or something like that, if you go and you get to know, they may not have a bouncer, but if you get to know the bartenders, if you get to know the hostess, and you just ask them some simple questions like, "Hey, what, you know, how is this place? What's a good night to come?" You get their name, then you ask a couple servers, you know, "What's the best thing on the menu? What's something that people never order that you really love?" You get their name, then you tell, you ask the manager like, "Hey, I just want to tell you this place is fucking awesome. Everyone's super nice." You give them a compliment, you get the manager's name, you come back on a date and you know everyone's name, they're going to treat you like a VIP, and your date's going to be so blown away, they're going to think you're like a celebrity. So this works anywhere, guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this works for employees anywhere, not even just, even in the gym. You know, I travel a lot, and many times I go to gyms in places where I don't have a membership because I don't live there. And just remember the person at the front desk, building a very short, you know, rapport with them, remembering the name and being nice to them. You will be surprised how many times I just get to the gym for free just because they remember me and they think I'm nice, you know?
Totally. Yeah, you know, just, yeah,
even
just
airlines,
giving a shit about
flight
people.
Attendants.
Yeah. That, especially yeah, the flight attendants. Mm-hmm.
Well, flight attendants, you have no idea the things that flight attendants have done for me that they were not supposed to do, you know? Like, from bringing that extra meal, you know, sometimes I'm hungry and, you know, the food in airplanes is very small. So they usually bring me that extra chocolate or that, you know, extra meal, even if they're supposed to give me only one. From that to, you know, even blocking seats next to me, I occasionally, actually very often, I get full rows for myself in planes that are full. And you will be surprised how many times the plane is completely full, but I have a full row for myself simply because the agent at the check-in blocked the two seats next to me. And other people don't even know this is possible. And oftentimes they're not supposed to do that, but they can, you know.
For sure.
So, yeah.
Well, dude, there's so much more I want to talk to you about. We should do another episode.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.